descent, claim your story. Spirit of the dead, rise up. Lingering spirit of the dead, rise up and possess your vessel. Those Africans shackled in leg irons and enslaved, step out of the acres of cane fields and cotton fields and tell your story. Spirit of the dead, rise up. Lingering spirit of the dead, rise up and possess your bird of passage. Those lynched in the magnolias, swinging on the limbs of the weeping willows, rotting food for the vultures, step down and claim your story. Spirit of the dead, rise up. Lingering spirit of the dead, rise up and possess your vessel. Those tied, bound, and whipped from Brazil to Mississippi, step out and tell your story. Those in Jamaica, in the fields of Cuba, in the swamps of Florida, the rice fields of South Carolina, you waiting Africans, step out and tell your story. Spirit of the dead, rise up. Lingering spirit of the dead, rise up and possess your bird of passage. From Alabama to Suriname, up to the caves of Louisiana, come out, you African spirits. Step out and claim your stories. You raped, slave bred, castrated, burned, tarred and feathered, roasted, chopped, lobotomized, bound and gagged, you African spirits, spirit of the dead, rise up. Lingering spirit of the dead, rise up and possess your bird of passage.
Oladamare, Jinyami, Olorun, God, Jehovah, Allah, Amun-Ra, the many names for the original ancestor, the ancestor who sees all and knows all, the creator of the heavens and the earth. We do not pour libation to you, but this morning we come pouring libation in memory and honor of our ancestors and asking them to intercede with you on our behalf. We know that our ancestors, being in the spirit world, are closer to you, and there's a greater opportunity that our request will be granted. We ask this morning that you grant the listeners the willingness to open their hearts and their minds to the information that's going to be shared, such that they will hear the truth and then be able to act on the truth. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation. To our ancestors from Mother Africa, the ancestors who were the beginning of the human family that we now have, no matter what your ethnic or cultural background is, the beginning of human life as we know it was on the African continent. Every person on the face of the earth has as their original ancestor an African. We ask those Africans who were the first to conceive of a family, the first to plant a seed, the first to till the land, the first to domesticate animals, the first to navigate the mighty Nile River to Egypt, the first to build a skyscraper, the first to do surgeries, the first to explore the wonders of the galaxy. And as importantly, the first to conceive of the belief in one God. We ask those ancestors to come and be with us today to bring their wisdom, their hard work, their ingenuity to all that we do. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation. To our ancestors who were murdered, displaced, diminished during our great Holocaust, our great Miafa. We do not forget you. We remember your unwilling sacrifice as your bodies are lined the Sahara and the Atlantic Ocean. We remember you and we honor you and we ask that you come and be with us today. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation. We ask our ancestors who gave us the great document, the Ma'at, to come be with us. Bring your additional sense of honor and integrity as embodied by Ma'at to our discussions and our listings this morning. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation. To those ancestors from the Caribbean islands, from Brazil, from the southern parts of these United States, who through your unpaid labor laid the groundwork for the civilizations that are enjoyed by billions of people around the world. To those ancestors, we say we do not forget you. We remember your sacrifice, your hard work, and we ask that you come and be with us today to inspire us to also do the work required to correct a world that has gone mad. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation. And to those ancestors who are yet to be born, those ancestors for whom we do good work, those ancestors to whom we pledge to honorably do righteous work all the time for ourselves, for our families, for our communities, so we can be correct to be able to benefit from the largesse that the Creator has provided for all of us. Ancestors, We pledge ourselves to continue to do work such that when you return, this place will be a better earth. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation. And finally, we'd like to ask you and our audience to think of one of your ancestors, someone who you would like to be with us this morning. On the count of three, ask that ancestor to come and be with us. One, two, three. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation, libation, libation. It is soup.
People use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
Never seen them before. But even so, we extended our hand as we would unto a friend. How could we have known that syphilis and claps and plague had come with them? That has been for days. But if we had known what they had in mind, they all would have died in the bay. So now we're paying for our mistakes, with only ourselves to blame, with memories of the good old years before the white man came.
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Hotep and greetings, my brothers and sisters. Good afternoon and welcome to the Black Reality Think Tank weekend edition with the Elders of Sankofa. I am so happy that you have been able to join us. We are here every Saturday evening at 6 p.m. Central Time. And we also are on 3 o'clock at Saturday as well, from 3 to 5 and then from 6 to 8. So thank you so much for being here with us and participating and offering us your input and support of our work here at the Black Reality Think Tank. One of the things that the Black Reality Think Tank Network was designed to do is to create a conversational platform that is open to members of the African family globally. This platform welcomes our discussions and your ideas that proselytize strong agendas that will nurture workable solutions within the African family and the African community. So happy that you are able to support the work that we are doing, and we will hopefully can continue to do that if the ancestors and the creator continues to stay with us. We have three other family members that are part of the Black Reality Think Tank Network. We have one that comes on Tuesday evenings from 7 to 9 that's produced and hosted by myself. And then there's one on Thursday from 6 to 8, produced by a group of millennial young women, call themselves After 7. And then our two Saturday programs, 3 to 6, and 6, I mean 3 to 5, and 6 to 8. So again, thank you so much. We're going to get right into our conversation, very dynamic discussion. And we have as our host tonight, as always, at the Elders Council program, and the Elders of Sankofa is our good brother Alfonso Watkins. So with that, I want to say good afternoon, brother Alfonso.
Hotep.
Hotep,
Baba.
Thank you. Thank you.
Right. I have permission to proceed.
Yes.
Thank you, Baba. Once again, family, it's truly always an honor and a pleasure to be able to share this space with you all at this time, through the Black Reality Think Tank and Time for Awakening radio broadcast. The first thing I would like to do is we always attempt to do a ancestral profile. So this evening, and the main focus is on the late great Bobby E. Wright. So I'm gonna read his intro from his book, Sociopathic Racial Personality. Dr. Bobby Wright was a black psychologist, so labeled not just because he was both black and a psychologist, but because he used his education, training, intellectual knowledge, and skill always in the best interest of black people. He had a philosophy of commitment, accountability, and service to the black community. Indeed, his life was one of love and dedication to the liberation and the race vindication of all people of African descent. To this end, he wrote, lectured, and taught as an active participant in the black liberation struggle. Dr. Wright was born in one of the oldest all-black communities in the United States, Hobson City, Alabama. He attended both elementary and high school there. His grandfather was one of the founders of Hobson City. These events undoubtedly contribute to his positive self-image and race consciousness. His professional career was outstanding. He was a truant officer, a teacher, college educator, a school psychologist, a mental health administrator, clinical psychologist, researcher, consultant, author, and computer expert. He was known locally, nationally, and internationally for his technical skills as well as his commitment to the progress of black people. He believed in the sanctity of the black family, and his dedication to his wife and his son was exemplary. At the time of his death in 1982, Dr. Wright was director of the Garfield Park Comprehensive Community Health Center in Chicago. Under his leadership, this mental health center, which now bears his name, became the largest totally black-controlled freestanding mental health center in the United States. Loving, living spirit, memory of inspiration of Dr. Bobby Wright. I just want to do the profile is on Dr. Bobby Wright and acknowledging him. We truly lost a giant at a very early age in his life. He was really in the context of even just reading a small manual that he put together with this book. He was really just starting to put some things on paper to lay a foundation, moving, you know, psychology, black psychology, along with the other brothers and sisters in developmental black psychology in the direction of transcending and transforming us from a theoretical perspective. So once again, we want to honor Dr. Bobby Wright. The other aspect of the Dr. Kwaku Romel Smith, he overbooked himself, so he won't be able to join us until the second hour. But I was able to get another brother who is a jewel, a gem in our community, to be part of us, to be with us for the first hour, and that's Brother LaRue Ned. And he is the author of Why We Shouldn't Call Our Ancestors Slaves. So I give him opportunity to break bread in a few moments. But I always want to start off with reading the purpose, mission of the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee. And once again, this is an organization or a group of elders from diverse backgrounds here in the city of Milwaukee who have come together to collaboratively and cooperatively work together to create a space where we can take control of the narrative and disseminate information that that would have an impact on the individuals in the African community. So the purpose of the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee is to use African principles of unity and cooperation to create a healing environment for our community by addressing environmental and social conditions and human disparities we face. Through the guidance of the elders of Sankofa, these principles will provide a unifying ideology for the collective mission of building a unified front with one voice in the city of Milwaukee. Our mission, to engage, aid, and assist each other in the continuous development of a movement and network of elders who are governed by the principles of Ma'at and the Nabugu Saba, the seven principles of Kwanzaa, as we move through the 21st century. The role and function of the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee will be to provide formation of policy and development of programs and services which will continue the growth, self-governance, and economic empowerment of the African-American community in Milwaukee. In a major component of the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee is establishing think tanks. And once again, what Dr. Rogers has started with the radio broadcast, we are attempting to do that in this space with individuals who have a certain level or who have levels of expertise. So once again, the role and mission of think tanks are to critically analyze our environment and social condition in this city through research and create proactive strategic solutions to address the circumstances and disparities. Each think tank will consist of members who have a particular interest, level of expertise, and experience within the area of science. Each member of the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee will commit to actively participating in supporting a think tank. So once again, the main focus of this is getting us, getting the elders in our community, bringing them back into the community to engage with the millennials, to start having some dialogue and exchange and start to repair our relationships as it relates to the elders and the millennials, but also to build relationships to help move the millennials into an area of understanding from a historical perspective how we have gotten in the condition that we are in. And we all recognize that this is seriously needed because many of our children, there's a saying that's going out now, we are not our ancestors. And those of us who have seen that, once again, it has moved us in a particular way to get us to recognize we, to a certain extent, we have dropped the ball as it relates to educating and socializing our children with the reality of how we've gotten into this condition and how their struggle is the same struggle that we have always had since we've been on these shores. So once again, that's the purpose of the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee. So due to time, I wanted to give my brother LaRue an opportunity to once again share his reasoning and rationale for writing the book. He's working on a number of different projects now, so I just turn it over to my brother to allow him to introduce this perspective, and then maybe 10 minutes before the closing of the hour, we give individuals opportunity to call in if they got questions. So, Brother LaRue, how you doing, man?
Doing all right. Hostess, thank you. Thank you for inviting me. No doubt about it. No doubt about it.
Yeah.
You know what? I've been watching what's going on out there, how we're acting, the ones protesting anyway, which is only a small portion of it. And how the Europeans have joined in, and so that looks like they're on our side and work with the damage done. I wonder when we question how do we get into this position. You have to go back even to the days before slavery. And we've been messed up ever since slavery. We've been messed up ever since we have lost our African mind. And to me, man, it looks like we're trying to, our house is on fire, and we're looking at the Europeans telling them that they need to clean up their backyard. Because it's all messy and everything. So they got a messy backyard, but our house is on fire. And so one thing I was thinking about was how we say Black Lives Matter. But maybe even more important than Black Lives Matter is Black Esteem Matter. Because we don't have a healthy self-esteem, then we're really not even living. We're like the walking dead without a good, healthy self-esteem and self-respect. And even as we protest about the police brutality and the police killing us, I mean, we have to look at what's happening in our community and what we're doing to ourselves. And I think we need to correct it, and that relates to our self-esteem. And I think in our understanding of how thoughts and beliefs work. And so what happens is that the from the time we were little babies and our children and our children's children and our parents when they were children and grandparents, we've all been raised under this idea that our ancestors were slaves. And along with that idea, we have been taught that we were pretty much docile under slavery. And that's why that girl said, we are not our ancestors. And that's because the Europeans are still educating us.
Could everybody please mute themselves? Like push the star key twice, because we're getting a lot of back feet feedback. So could everybody please mute themselves? Brother LaRue, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
All right, brother. So you were going into the concept of the image of what when we think of slavery. So you want to go more into that?
Yeah, and how it affects our self-esteem. Because our self-esteem, if you want to call it self-esteem, our ego, self-love for self, that's a better way to put it than self-esteem, that dictates what we believe we can do and what we believe we cannot do. And since we've been bombarded with the idea over generations that our ancestors were slaves, we are slipping more into darkness than we've ever been. And I believe until we correct this error so that it becomes common knowledge that our problems will persist because it affects our self-esteem. We subconsciously, we know that the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. And I don't care how well we do anything, that still, in the back of our minds, if we believe our ancestors were slaves, it's going to affect how we view ourselves and how we view each other. There are plenty of examples of how black people have done great things under slavery, and we call them slaves. But the thing about it is that the underlying factor is that they did great things because their so-called master told them to do it, or they were guided by the so-called slave masters. So, but this idea has led us to make a certain a psychological and spiritual errors. One of them is like, if we accept a lie as truth, then our thinking is going to be skewed because our thinking and how we analyze things based on that understanding of truth is going to be skewed. We have not looked at our logic. And then I've already talked about how it affects our self-esteem. And our esteem determines what we can and cannot do. But it's also led us into some spiritual errors through, like the group with the girl, to disconnect from our ancestors. And so when we do that, I call it abandonment of form. So if we are rejecting our African way of life, our African way of thinking, our African self, then there's nothing left for us to do but to accept the European point of view. And that's what's happening, that because of slavery, we're viewing the world, God, and everything else through European eyes. And when we look at each other, we see ourselves like Europeans see us. And then we begin to treat each other like Europeans have treated us historically. And so that's kind of it in a nutshell. And everybody honors their ancestors. We honor our ancestors, but not as a people. And I've had people either get mad at me when I say we ought to thank our ancestors, we ought to honor our ancestors, and they'd be like, for what? Because their lives are so messed up that they really kind of get to hating the position that they're in, self-hatred is going on, and all of that. So all of that is culminating in our actions as a people.
Right. And as I'm listening to you, Big Bro, Bobby Wright's book, The Sociopathic Racial Personality and Other Essays, in his book, the first chapter, he's talking about the personality disorder of the European, but also the second and third chapter, he goes more into what you're talking about as it relates to the concept of how we have not taken ownership of educating our children. And the reality of here moving into the 21st century, our children have a total disconnect to the concept of what our ancestors sacrificed, the victories, the way we fought, the tactics that we used to fight. The science of the spook who set me up by the door. They don't understand the different forms of how we were fighting behind enemy lines, how we were fighting in these hostile situations, how we had to learn particular social skills to be able to survive, to go come out of our homes and go to the store, go to school, how all those skill sets that we had to acquire to be able to survive. So what you are articulating is critical. And once again, Bobby Wright touched on that in his book, Psychopath Racial Personality. Hey, could you go a little bit more in detail about why you chose to write a book, your book, and call it Why We Shouldn't Call Our Ancestors Slaves? What motivated you to do that, brother?
I was working for an American African newspaper. And I was going to write something about slavery. So I went to the dictionary and looked up the word slave. I mean, which I had never done before. I wouldn't have done it if I wasn't writing that article or column. And when I read it, it dawned on me that this definition did not fit. Our ancestors fought like hell in resistance to slavery. And so, but in the definition, it's saying that all our freedom was took. We didn't have the power to resist. And this kind of thing, I'm like, well, this definition does not fit. And this country became a world power because of slavery. And for them, if it ain't broke, why fix it? But when the more I began to study the subject, the idea of slavery permeated every element of American culture. And even the church, everybody, the idea of slavery influenced their thought and their perspective of black people. And so, I lost my thought a little bit, but that's what led us to integration. And if you know, you can look back in the history, for integration, we had our own banks, we had our own schools, we had our own cleaners, we had, even in the 60s, we had more than we got now. And our lack of progress is definitely based on how we view and value each other. A house divided against itself cannot stand. And that's where we are as a people. And we can see it in we can see it in the streets, in our social activities. We can see it in our music. We have no respect for each other according to our music. I bust a cap in the ass.
Right. And like I say, my brother, as I listen to you, there's a science that as a collective group of people, we have to start studying. And it's called neuro-linguistics programming, or neuro-linguistics deprogramming. And what neuro-linguistics deprogramming means or is how words organize and shape our reality. and how it constructs an image. So when as I've gotten to know you and be around you, the concept of the word slave and the image that is portrayed of what a slave is once again is a passive, docile, submissive image. That they don't show the rebellious side of the slave. They always show the side of us where we always been submissive. But once again, that's why it's important for us to take control of the narrative of our story, like the Jews have done. These Jews are not going to let nobody say nothing about them. And we've seen that how they played that with Nick Cannon.
Nick Cannon, right?
So we have to take that same stance, family. We gonna have to take the same stance that we can't allow nobody to take control of the narrative of what our ancestors have experienced. And I'm out here working with the young people, so I'm speaking in the context of how they see it. That's why they got a problem with us, because we have not necessarily took the necessary stances that we need to take. So once again, understand why they are angry, but then at the same time, we have to do a better job as the adults, as the elders, to take more control of the information that is being disseminated to our children, our grandchildren, what they've been exposed to in the houses. We got to take more ownership of that.
And we do. And there was a time when we thought we was taking ownership of it, and that's when we was out there with Dr. King and demonstrating and protesting and talking about separate but equal and trying to get into their schools. And we thought that their education would empower us like it empowered the Europeans. And it didn't work that way. Like Carter G. Woodson said, their education kills the spark of genius in us. And that's exactly what happened. And that's why that's one of the main reasons we're not making the progress that we're making.
But also we have to remember when we talk about the Black Power, Civil Rights, Revolution, Pan-Africanist move, there was a number of different movements moving in the 60s. And so the Civil Rights Movement, they got the platform and got the light. But you had the Nation of Islam had their own independent schools. The Black Panthers, they had their own, the Pan-Africanists, they had their schools. The Revolutionary Guerrilla, so we had pockets where we were attempting to hold on to our culture. But part of, once again, once the integration piece happened, the dismantling, and then the other piece that happened too, a lot of times we don't talk about the imprisonment and the assassination of many of those brothers and sisters who was in those spaces and those movements that was making that happen. So a lot of times as we had this conversation, we really, and this is where Doc Rogers come in, that we really have to be looking at from a historical perspective of how we got in this condition, what type of tactics they were using to create the void in our space, in our community. So like I said, that we got to start looking at it from that perspective as well.
Right. I don't know why we're not. I mean, I think that there are a lot of us that are, but we just don't have the voice to make it a common knowledge. They're not going to put it on TV. And I think Gil Scott was correct when he said the revolution will not be televised.
Right.
Something watching on TV is a fake revolution.
Right. And the other piece, man, like I say, every time me and you talk, the conversation is always good. I'm hoping, listener audience is getting something out of it as well. We have to recognize that in capitalism, in the 60s, you could do much more with a dollar. The 50s and 60s. So when we talk about a revolution has to be financed. So financially, in the time that we live in now, it's difficult, once again, for individuals to make the type of commitments that their brothers and sisters could have made back then because of the dollar. Because when you think about, and Dr. Rogers then was talking this
talking about this on their show last week, was when in the movement, they didn't stay in white hotels. They had to, you know, whatever city they were going to, the community housed them. The community fed them. You know, so you were able to do much more with a dollar because, once again, with the dollar could buy more groceries. Once again, as far as with being able to move your car, the gas was cheaper. So you was able to do much more. But now, as we move into the 21st century, those of us who are out here really putting work in, we know that it costs more to live. So a lot of people ain't going to make the type of commitment that needs to be made because we have to, the lifestyle has changed.
Right.
Because ain't no money in what we do, man. You know, many of us are taking tremendous sacrifices and losing a lot in this, you know, in the struggle.
Right. All of that goes with our, how we do and value each other. The unity that we have. That reminds me of that movie, The Killer, Raising in the Sun, I think it was. Is that what the dude was trying to get his money together? And the message of that movie, black people can't trust each other. And then we turned around and called that a good movie.
Right. Yeah. So, and then we got about 12 minutes left. Doc Rogers, have you made it back yet?
Yes, sir. I'm back. Yes, indeed. You got some friends online. I don't know whether you want to open up now.
Yeah, let's open up and, you know, see if people got questions for Brother LaRue.
All right, let's go over here, my brother, Oshiemi Adelabu, African Perspectives. How you doing, brother?
Hey, Doc, how are you doing?
Great,
hey,
great.
Hey, panel, how things going?
Great. Hey, big brother, how you feeling, man?
I'm feeling fine. I'm feeling great. I just really am just listening in, Doc, and you know, Brother Alfonso, I'm just listening in, doing the dialogue, but also, too, I really support my brother, LaRue Ned,
and his
book, Why We Shouldn't Call Our Ancestors Slaves. In fact, not only should we not call them slaves, but we should try our best not to use the word slave. Because when you use the word continuously as we do, it becomes synonymous with us, and we begin to put our faith on that word. It's almost automatically up. Somebody says the slave,
right,
paint
right.
our faith, even though other human beings have been in servitude at some time or another, you know. So,
that's right.
Good program. I thank y'all. Thanks, Doc.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Thank you.
You know, it's interesting. LaRue has taught a whole generation of people about the usage of that word, because I will admit, I mean, I'm a historian. I've used it not in a derogatory sense, but I've used it many times in description work and in just historical analysis. You know, it just goes with the territory. And, you know, very clearly I've changed that, you know, since embracing more of what he tried to say in that book. So if any of our audience has not had a chance to read his book, I would definitely invite you to read Brother LaRue Ned's work. Very good book. For those of you who may be listening via the internet, this is a call-in format, area code 215-490-9832. You can call us with your questions or comments. So with that, I'm going to move on over here to Brother Horace. Brother Horace, how you doing, my brother?
Hey, I'm doing good, but my phone, I always get static when I talk. Are you guys hearing me okay?
Yeah, oh, yeah, real good.
Yeah, we can hear you.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize that. Oh, wow.
Did you have a comment or want to ask a question, or you just kind of listening?
Hey, can I throw something in real quick, then?
I think we lost Brother Horace. So
yeah,
you can. We lost him. Okay. Brother LaRue.
Oh, yeah, okay. Also, I'm putting it on YouTube, and as I'm putting it on YouTube, I'm even making improvements, putting in more information, and I think my argument might be even a little bit more logical than it was, as this is an idea that continues to grow.
Okay.
So they go to YouTube, put in the room there. I'm putting it in the audio book form.
Okay, great.
Okay.
probably got time for one more, Brother Alfonso. You want me to do that? You want me to go to one more?
Yeah.
Okay, let's go over always to my brother Lush, very strong supporter of the Black Reality Think Tank. Brother Lush, how you doing? You just left us with the other program, so you're back again. Thank you.
As always, thank you so very much, Dr. Rogers and Dr. Watkins and Brother LaRue. And
thank you.
Pleasure talking to you all again. My question is to Brother LaRue, how important is it that we pay very close attention to the kind and type of vocabulary that we come across in our educational system? You know, sometimes we have these lists of words that are only used for certain kinds and types of situations. So how important is it that we need to focus our attention on vocabulary, on the lexicon, terminologies, et cetera, definitions as well?
They are important. They guide our thought processes, and they form images for us. And communication is a survival tool, and so the words we use are going to influence our communication. And how we do and value each other. That's extremely important. I'm saying, we're talking about Black Lives Matter, but so does Black esteem. Black esteem matters.
Thank you.
Did I answer it?
You're fine. You're fine with me.
LaRue, your telephone is a little muffled. I don't know, it sounds if you're from a distance, you know, you were stronger earlier. I don't know, maybe you might want to check that if you can, please.
I'll check that.
Okay, Brother Horace came back. Brother Horace, we thought we had lost you at one time there. Did you want to say something, ask the question? Brother Horace?
No, I'm good. My phone just keeps cutting out. So
I'm going to listen. Okay. So, Brother Alfonso, what do you want to do?
Yeah. And Brother Lush, always, his questions are always critical and thought-provoking. So I appreciate the question that he asked, because that goes back to what I was talking about with the neurolinguistics of deprogramming. And part of what we have to understand as it relates to the intellectual and psychological warfare that is being implemented on us through language and through the imagery that comes with the language. And then the reality that the technology that we are continuously exposing ourselves to with the television and being on the computer and in the phone, with the imagery and the word usage, is creating cognitive imagery processes, cognitive images which we are processing. And in many cases, the images that we see of ourselves and the words that go with those images, like we were saying, we begin to believe and take, and it becomes like a self-fulfilling prophecy, where we take on the reality of being a thug. We take on the reality of being a bitch. We take on the reality of being a savage. So and then that's being pumped through the music. So we have to be understand the type of warfare that is being implemented or that's being used as it relates to keeping us in this state of being. So I appreciate the question from Brother
The Native American used to say that a white man speaks with a forked tongue, but the way that the English language is constructed, a lot of words can have more than one meaning depending on the context. And a lot of context that we have amongst us as a people are due to, first of all, our expectations, And then number two, our interpretation of the words that we're using. And most of the conflict, especially the homicides, are based on the fact that this guy disrespected me. I think much of the conflict is based on miscommunication.
Yeah, yeah. And it goes back to the, once again, word usage and the images that come with words. And so we, once again, I think we, at a critical, in our story, we had a critical stage of our story where we have to recognize, and I'm going to keep hitting this home, we can't continue to send our children to the enemy to be educated. We are not serious. We are truly it's unfortunate that we're sending our children to the slaughter. And we are not putting things in place to protect them. And so I think we have to, I ain't gonna say I think, before we can build a nation, before we can really start talking about building a nation, we have to protect our women and our children. We're gonna have to do that.
No doubt. I say,
that
way.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah. So, Doc, if you want to, it's the top of the hour, so okay. We can do the top of the hour song, and then when you come back, I give you Kwaku's number, then we can keep it moving.
You can text
me. I'm on, Brother Watkins.
Oh,
okay,
hey,
good.
My brother,
okay.
How you doing?
All right.
So that's good. I see his number. Okay, fantastic. Okay.
So at the top of the hour, we do the top of the hour, then we can go into the conversation on Dr. Keep Out the Right.
Doing all that I can to stay. Oh, but I look around and I see what's being done to my kind. Every day I'm being haunted as brain. My people don't want no trouble. We better know struggle. I just wanna live. God protect me. I just wanna live. I just wanna live.
This is Revolution Church.
The year is 2020, the number. Another summer, get down. Sound of the funky drummer. Music ain't the heart, cause I know you got soul.
The information age got him seeing what's really wrong with these racist days. I honor the strong and pity the weak. Your thoughts run your life, be careful what you think. Haiti beat France in century 17. Celine Toussaint and Dessalines. And I do love France, know what I mean? It's a system I'm talking, nobody's agreeing. They say it's suicide when dead bodies are swinging. Cowards are hunting black men, that's what I'm seeing. How many toasters have been burnt down? And once Central Park was a thriving black town. Yo, Chuck, I'm fighting the power right now. Thanks to you, Flav and P.E. putting it down. Putting your life on the line so I can rap now. The next generation still singing, fight the power.
Fight the power. Fight the power. Fight the power.
How long we've been at war. The revolution living on our platform. You break a man's mind and it's back, your solidarity is what I'm wearing all black for. For comrades who don't fought without me, it's not to try and change our thoughts about me or to redirect your reports about me. Dear white people, you should take a course about me, cause is it the long four finger ring, the sciences of the arts, the songs we can sing? I really wanna know why y'all so scared. Body cut the promised land, we almost scared. But look, I think of images that fuel my youth, interviews by Craig Hodges and Abdul Raouf. Examples like Olympic black power salutes and Panther troops. I saw as I pursue my truth. If racism is a cancer, black thoughts the answer. Gotta get up off the back porch, emancipate your mind, get your bodies back from ransom.
Come on.
And all black hands up for the anthem.
Yo, yo, check this out, man.
Bring that beat back, man. Two,
people, people, stronger than this evil, smashing your power structure, melanin royal regal, system designed to kill and unprotect, worldwide hit the streets just to get some respect, our fight and our rights for freedom will never waver, justice Breonna Taylor, salute Chuck and Flavor, feel the same anger since Radio Raheem died, black power to the people, push forward pride.
Fighting power like it's an octo, born to fight, I made it off the block though, thought he had a gun and he was black, that's the combo. The police killed George having a convo. They killed Malcolm X, they killed Dr. King. They gave us guns and dope, they want to stop our kings. Trying to erase our history, stop and think. History class ain't tell us about Juneteenth. Cops don't give a damn about a Negro. Pull a trigger, kill a Negro, he's a key, bro. Those living life on welfare. The last one who killed was Obamacare, round 12. Nose kind of bloody, gotta keep fighting. Trump through the North Korea, they respect violence. If you ain't trying to have your city on fire, put some respect on our name. We come from gold and diamonds.
Fight the power! Fight the power! Fight the power! We got to fight the powers that be. Elvis was a hero of the month, but he never meant to me. You see, straight up, racist and sucker was simply plain. Cause I'm black and I'm proud, I'm ready, I'm hyper, I'm amped. Most of my heroes don't appear in those stamps. Therefore, look back, you look and find nothing but rated for 400 years if you check.
Don't worry, be happy.
Was a number one jam. Damn if I said you could slap me right here. Get it.
Let's get this party started right.
Right on, come on, what we got to say? Power to the people, know the lay. Make everybody see in order to fight the powers that be.
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
We are back, my brothers and sisters, here with the Sankofa Council of Elders with Brother Alfonso Watkins. We welcome you, all of you, if you've just joined us. We thank you so much for being with us and supporting the Black Reality Think Tank network of programs. We are here every Saturday afternoon from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Central Time. We are also here on Saturdays at 3 p.m. to 5 p.m. with the weekend edition, Black Sister Talks, from 3 to 5 on Saturday. We are also here on Tuesday from 7 to 9 with the Black Reality Think Tank, hosted by myself. And then on Thursday, we have a group of young millennials who are here, mothers who are talking about their children, their professions, their community, and things of that nature. And they're here every Thursday evening from 6 to 8, and they call themselves After 7. So that is the Black Reality Think Tank family. What we are doing is that we are a network designed to create a conversational platform that is open to members of the African family globally. The platform welcomes discussions and ideas that proselytize strong agendas that will nurture workable solutions within the African community, within the African family. We are broadcasting on the platform or timeforanawakening.com, which is a part of the blacktalkradionetwork.com, which is the number one African podcast in the world. It is rated number one by an independent body of podcast systems. So we are proud to be a part of this. Also on this platform is another very good and powerful friend and neighbor, Just spoke for him a few minutes ago. Brother Oshiemi Adelabu has a program called African Perspectives. That program airs every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Time. He's broadcasting out of Atlanta, Georgia. It's called African Perspectives with Brother Oshi every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And then on Friday evenings from 8 to 10, we have Time for an Awakening. That's with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, broadcasting out of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Time for an Awakening. And they are again here on Sundays from 7 to 10, 7 to 10, all Eastern Time, in what is called Time for an Awakening. Very dynamic program, exciting guests. And I want to mention one other program. There's a program that's just started on Monday evenings, and that is from 7 Central, was 8 o'clock, because they're on the East Coast, I think, from 7 o'clock to 9 o'clock. It's called Black Therapy Central. Black Therapy Central, and that program is hosted by Dr. Mariah Cambone. And she was the former president of the Association of Black Psychologists. She had an opportunity. She was a guest of our program back Tuesday before last. And so they also have a program on Tuesday right here on Time for Awakening. And you can go into our website at www.timeforanawakening.com, which is the website, and pull down the podcast portal and go into any of our programs, African Perspectives, Black Reality, Sankofa Council of Elders, Black Women Talk, and After 7, and listen to any of the programs that have broadcast. And we're more than welcome to do that, and we appreciate your support and your continued effort. So with that, I am going to turn this back over to my brother with his guest. I'm going to open up Brother Alfonso's line. Brother Alfonso, well, okay. Brother Alfonso, you are there. Okay, there you are. And yes. I'm going to open up your guest as well. Brother Kwaku, I got you. All right.
All right, man. All right, thanks. Once again, family, this is the second hour, and once again, we truly appreciate brothers and sisters taking out their time on a Saturday evening. And like I say, it is 80, almost 90 degrees here in Milwaukee, so I know it's hot in other places. So we truly thank y'all for taking out the time to be in this space with us, in the discipline that it takes, the commitment that it takes, because we are at war. And it's going to require us to get to another level of, I'm going to say, commitment to changing the conditions that we are living in and that our children are going to face. But today's conversation is once again is around the legacy of Bobby E. Wright, a brother we lost at an early stage of his life, where he was just once again starting to put some things on paper for to have this conversation about the reality of the psychopathic personality disorder that with these Europeans. Could everyone mute their mics, because we're getting some feedback. So part of what I want to do with the time that we get left, I want to read, before I turn it over to the brother Kwaku, I want to read what sociopath and psychopath and antisocial person, the definitions of these terms. So we can, as we have the conversation, that Kwaku goes into some of the science of this, that we all are functioning out of the same frame of reference. So sociopathic personality service and antisocial reaction is a chronically antisocial individual who are always in trouble, profiting neither from experience or punishment, maintaining no real loyalty to any person, group, or code. They are frequently callous and hedonistic, showing no marked emotional immaturity, with the lack of sense of responsibility, lack of judgment, and the ability to rationalize the behavior so that they appear warranted, reasonable, and justifiable. Now, that's a sociopathic personality. Now, a psychopathic personality, his conduct often brings him into conflict with society. The psychopath is driven by primitive desires and exaggerated craving for excitement. In his self-centered search for pleasure, he ignores restrictions of culture. The psychopath is highly impulsive. He is a man of whom the moment is a segment of time detached from all others. His actions are unplanned, unguided by his will. The psychopath is aggressive in his learned few socialized ways of coping with frustration. The psychopath feels little, if any, guilt. He can commit the most appalling acts, yet view them without remorse. The psychopath has a warped view of love. His emotional relationships with the when they exist are meager, fleeting, designed to satisfy his own desires. And the last one is the antisocial, psychopathic, and sociopath. Over-evaluation of immediate goals as opposed to remote or deferred ones. Unconcerned over the rights and privileges of others when recognizing they would interfere with personal satisfaction in any way. Impulsive behavior or apparent incongruency between the strength of the stimulus and the magnitude of the behavioral response. Inability to form deep and persistent attachments to other persons or identify in interpersonal relationships. Poor judgment in planning and attaining defined goals. Apparent lack of anxiety and distress over social maladjustments and unwillingness and or inability to consider maladjustments and tendencies to project blame onto others and to take no responsibility for failure. The reason I want to read those, because as we had this conversation, what Bobby Wright was attempting to do, and some brothers, some other scholars and psychologists took his research further, was attempting to create a theoretical theory of why the Europeans acted the way they act, from a black perspective. Because what we have to really understand is that we have a romanticized relationship with these Europeans. There's an illusion that we are the same and we're not the same. And that's part of what my brother Kwaku is going to go into that, because he loves to hit that mental side piece. But I just want to read that so that we can, once again, as we had this conversation, we can all come from the same frame of reference. So once again, my guest is Brother Kwaku. He's a brother from a different mother. I've been knowing his brother. Oh, man, I met Kwaku in about 2002, 2001. Both of us was working at the Ethan Allen juvenile jail for boys. So that's why I met this brother. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing good, King. It's a pleasure to be on. I'm listening to it, and you know, this is where we need to be, because when you talk about as far as, like, how do we get out of this mindset, it's an old saying that says it's hard to get well in a place that made you ill. And, you know, you reference to it as far as, like, where we send our children to school. And when you stay around sickness, you can't help but to what, you know, exemplify that sickness, because you're not going to get better. If you're around somebody who coughing and got germs, you can't never expect to get rid of that cold.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right, brother. That's right. So, with the science of what Bobby Wright was going into, and understanding the aspect of the European male and his hatred toward black men and the black family, and being able to identify that, could you go a little bit into that, man, to help the audience?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you go into you know, Brother Bobby Wright, and, you know, I just want to give a moment of silence for the ancestor. Brother Bobby Wright, you know, and this is the epitome of it. You know, not only did we do work at the Department of Juvenile Corrections together, but we also got our degree in the same place. And when you look at it, we understand how we were miseducated. We understand how they kept us away from scholars, specifically because we're in the field of psychology, like the Amos Wilsons, like the Naeem Akbars, the Juwans, the Kenjufus, the Bobby Wrights. I'm talking about the people who really hit on it, because they were speaking on some things that they didn't want us to know. And in the Carter G. Woodson masterpiece, The Miseducation of the Negro, the goal is to what? Educate that Negro in the ways of a society, of a way of a system that's counterproductive, that's contrary to him and his people, to be able to what? Continue the plan of those masters of mankind, those architects of society, those evil architects of society that control and rule the world. And best be known, when you start talking about that one-tenth of 1% of those people who are viciously in a capitalistic global society, not just here in America, but throughout the world, you start to see how they're able to manipulate through their capitalistic funds. And that's one of the ways in which they feed their evil system. And so when you talk about, you know, where do we go from, I think you have to start from the basis, from a biological, physiological standpoint. You understand that a brain is 90% developed by the time a child is five. So that critical race to the brain is so essential in the early years. When you listen to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, you listen to the Honorable Louis Farrakhan, one of the things that they'll tell you that's absolutely right on point, they say that the first teacher of the child is the mother. So if you can break down that home structure, if you can break down that home system, if you can start to infiltrate that mind when it's that early, oh, that's when the trouble comes. Because you know why? See, in the beginning of the brain, it grows sequentially. So you go not with the prefrontal cortex, not with the frontal lobe that doesn't really develop till you're 25, 28, but I'm talking about that part of your brain that from the diencephalon that goes from the body movement all the way up to the area where you're dealing with now. I'm dealing with the limbic system. I'm dealing with those visceral emotions that almost animal side of our brain that reacts, that does before it thinks. And if you can say, hey, I can get you 90% developed by the age of five, well, then guess what? You already have a person in them traps, and the traps are so quick and easy in society. When you listen to Brother Martin Luther King, he'll tell you that it's three evils of the world, and it wrapped around militarism, consumerism, and racism, and all of those are umbrellas under the arch of racism. And how do you keep a person doing the things that you want? How do you keep a person in a slave system? I've listened to you talk many a times, and you talked on the Stockholm Syndrome when a person falls in love with his captors, and even though his captors might not be doing what's in the best interest of them, exactly what they do is they perpetuate their own hurt. They become counterproductive. They're counter-revolutionary to their own movement. And Brother Bobby Wright made it very, very clear to us when he talked about that in his groundbreaking work, The Psychopathic Racial Personality. And he went over to talk about the specific area of menticide. You read definitions. I'll read this one to you verbatim from Brother Bobby Wright. It says, menticide is the deliberate and systematic destruction of a group's mind with the ultimate objective being the extrapolation of the group. And when you look at that now, what we're looking at is this. It's not an individual. This is a group. And if you look at something like as ill as the enslavement period, that they have whitewashed and sanitized, deodorized, and sterilized, and tried to make us think with slavery, when you look at that cruel human trafficking system that they had, when you have a child who is born into slavery, and that child's child is born into slavery, and that child's child is born into slavery, what you're doing is already you're re-equipping all of the minds. If you look at the 1804 revolution in Haiti, one of the reasons and why they were able to be so strong is because it was so difficult and over there for them to mine the fields and the areas that they were killing people. So they had to come and they had to recruit more people. But every time you kept recruiting, you were recruiting what? People who were fresh out of there, and they were getting warrior class. So it's people who was like, I'm not going to be your house Negro. I'm not going to be your field Negro. I'm going to be a Maroon. In fact, I'm going to be free. I'm going to take over from this on myself. See, what happened is they couldn't capture that mind with those individuals from my brothers coming to the Caribbean. But what they could do with the brothers in North America specifically, because they did outnumber them, what they did is they, oh, my goodness, how did they tranquilize us? How did they inoculate us? How did they brainwash us and indoctrinate us? You look at in all of the ways in which they did, and what's the number one way in which they still keep us on, you want to say anesthetized? It's through the beautiful puppetry of religion. And I'm not talking about spiritual, because we are spiritual people, and that's how we were able to be able to convert. But this is what I actually honestly believe, though, Brother Alfonso, and I think this is where the okey-doke came in. Our ancestors in the beginning wanted no part in this religion of the white man, but they understood what they had to do to stay alive. So if you look at, like, the art of our brothers over in South America, specifically in Brazil, when you look at, like, the art of Caballero, you know, where they had the people who had enslaved them thinking that they were dance, and they had them thinking that they were doing a good time all of the time. They were training a craftful master art, martial arts, to be able to protect and to bend themselves and to be ready when it was time, the right time for the revolt, right time for the rebellion. But what happened was, over time, individuals started to recognize how dangerous that was, and they wouldn't even let them do that. I think the same okey-doke was poured on religion, but we didn't get a chance to recognize that it was the okey-doke, because what you started to see is in religion specifically is where the indoctrination comes in. People believe in something so mighty. And if, like I said, our ancestors believed in the beautiful spirits. They believed in the ancestors. They believed in that all-guiding power. But what happened was they shifted for those evil people who had enslaved them. But through generations and generations, some people forgot that they were pretending to put on the master's religion for their real religion, and then their religion started to dissipate. And you see it in any immigrant that comes over. You know it's a difference between the first generation immigrant and the second and third and fourth, because they start to assimilate. And now not only do you assimilate them into the culture, but now you start to get the mixture of that evil man's blood inside the system of the people. And so now you have this dual nature, and that's really what W.E.B. Du Bois was talking about when he talked about that dual consciousness of a human being, where we have to walk one way in public and then walk another way in our private lives. But the reason why we were able to assimilate, and that's even us today, if we'd be perfectly honest, because we have gotten comfortable with this man's comfort creatures. We have gotten comfortable in the art of materialism and consumerism, too, even those of us who proclaim to be those fighting for justice and marching. So we have to do a detox in our brain, do a detox in our mind, because, like he said, it's not just an individual, but he's done a group thing. And what happens with anything in a group? Whenever you take an individual from the group itself ostracizes you. Says if you want the comfort, if you want the love, if you want the protection of this group, you can't be talking out of pocket. You can't be bringing that. So even people who want to explore another side, who want to see something, who feel a pull on them from the ancestors to go a different way than what the general population may go, they're pulled in by the sisters. They're pulled in by the stresses of this capitalistic system life that we live in. And we never get to fully manifest ourselves. And you know why it's easy to do that? Because that was already implanted in us. You know this, being a behavior scientist, the art of change is very difficult. So to get a person to change when they want to change is difficult. But to get a person to change when they don't want to change, or Lord have mercy, they don't even know they need to change, is absolutely impossible. And what you see then is now the perpetuation of this whole indoctrination. And what it is a mental genocide. And you see the mental genocide perpetrated every day in our culture. They want to call it black-on-black crime, but all I call it is a manifestation of hurt. So when we see all of these things, it's not that the individuals by nature, are psychopathic, at least our people, what we're talking about, but because of the nurturing, because of the environment system, because of the environment of teratogens, because of the environmental toxins, because of the environmental hurts and pains that's been enacted upon our individuals, on our brothers and sisters, upon you and me, we tend to go left at some time. And so when we start to think about this, and what Bobby Wright was trying to tell us is, like, listen, we got to come back to our own mind. We got to flush out all of this stuff. It's like a person that's going through literal detox on drugs. How do we flush all of this system out? And so when you saw our brothers in the 60s and 70s, they started to reclaim that heritage by wearing the afro, putting on the dashikis, taking on African names, learning Swahili, wanting to be involved in different events that brought us back to our culture. And that's why Robert Moranga and the crew that he was with was able, and I know Janae Herrera was in here there with him, they say Robert Moranga, but it was a lot of other people with him that helped to establish Kwanzaa. But it was those things as far as coming, getting back to our culture. But what did the mainstream do? They wanted to find a way to materialize it, water it down, and it didn't have the same power. It didn't have the same passion and vigor in it and what it was supposed to do. You take it back to the music of hip-hop, which was another strain from our culture, and you saw the brothers, whether you go to KRS-One, you go to Public Enemy, you go to Ty Peachy Thomas from Arrested Development, you go to X-Clan, you go to any of these brothers who was preaching a revolutionary talk, even Queen Latifah at a time with the Jungle Brothers and them, they had a different revolutionary walk. But what did the mainstream find out? Hey, this language is too powerful. They get back to the drums, the rhythm with these beats. The warrior spirit's going to come. So what did they do? They said, you know what we got to do? We got to give them what they want, but give it to them in a different way. So we're going to give you your war drums, but what we're going to do is infiltrate it with different words, with different vicious things to control your mind in different ways. And what did I tell you? That young mind is so influential. And so when we start to incorporate that with the money and greed that some people could get, and then they get successful, a false way that what we deem success with our people is through success, is through people looking as though if you drive this car, if you live in this house, you can flash this chain or this watch or this bling like you made it. See, that's part of the indoctrination. That's part of the misgivings. That's part of the hurt that we share. So when you start talking about what was Bobby Wright trying to get to, Bobby Wright was trying to help us save our very minds. We look at it from the Harlem Renaissance when that was coming up. They saw how powerful a movement it is. So you go from the Harlem Renaissance to Harlem now, where it's been gentrified to take away all of the power and the essence of the ancestors so that spirit could not come back up again. So what we got to do is say, hey, how do we remove ourselves from all of this foolishness, all of these things that we know put us down? But the question is not do we know what we have to do. The question is, do we have the strength, the willpower, and the want to be able to remove ourselves so we can flush all of this negativity, flush all of this miseducation out, so then we can be reprogrammed, in a sense, have a cognitive restructuring, so we can implant in our mind the things that's already within our cellular DNA, so those things can rise. We take out the poison so the beautiful things can grow.
Say, my brother. Family, that is Dr. Kwaku Romel Smith, clinical psychologist, one of our jewels in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Brother, we going to get you back to do a full 2 hours, and we going to get Brother LaRue back to do a full 2 hours, man. But appreciate you, man. I always appreciate the science and how you drop the science, man. You always keep it 100, and so we love you for that, man. But before we open the lines up, Dr. Rogers, I wanted to share there's some African scholars who have taken what the direction that Baba Wright was going into. The first one is, once again, is Amos Wilson. So Amos Wilson wrote the book, The Falsification of African Consciousness. Amos Wilson, The Falsification of African Consciousness. This is a must-read for those who want to understand from a psychological and from a psychiatry perspective of how Europeans come in and misdiagnose us, diagnose us, then come up with the treatment for it. So what he does is he gives a real good perspective, insight of how psychology and psychiatry is being used to, once again, to keep us in a state of mysticism. And everybody knows about the ISIS papers, The Key to the Color Code by Dr. Frances Press Welson. Once again, she went to what Kwaku was just talking about, the epigenetics, the science of our DNA, and the reality of the even in pseudobiology and pseudopsychology of the Europeans, how it's the foundation of it is a falsification of science. So we have to start understanding. That's why it's so important for us to read what our African scholars have already put forth, but then also read it in a way where we can come up with theoretical modalities and research models to move this science further. And I know Dr. Wade Nobles is doing something in the month of August, family. And I know it's on the Facebook page for the Houston Black Psychologist, Black Psychology of Houston. But Wade Nobles is going to be doing a piece on the science of African psychology. So I'm sure he's going to touch on this. And just two more books, family. Yorubu by Marumba Ani is another. She's done a magnificent job at, once again, at creating a paradigm or a theoretical model for us to understand the difference between an African-centered perspective or African worldview versus a European worldview, but from a cultural perspective, and the reality of how culture shapes and organizes and creates, shapes your personality and it cultivates your spirit. And the last book is the United Independent Compensatory Code System and Concept by Neely Fuller. And once again, he does a magnificent job at breaking down the science of how racism is impacting 9 areas of our human activity. And we have to start understanding how do we, like Brother Kwaku was just saying, how do we go through the exorcist? How do we go through the process of detoxing ourselves from functioning in these systems in a way that's benefiting the Europeans? So I just wanted to put that out there. So, Doc Rogers, if you can open it up for people who may have questions, we can keep it moving.
Okay, very good. Thank you. I definitely enjoyed the commentary, Dr. Kwaku. I remember meeting you one day over at the radio station, WNOV. Wonderful expose. Brother Alfonso, I just want to also mention, too, that and Brother Kwaku mentioned that in the very early part, is that the historians had attempted to address a lot of this as well. He mentioned Carter Woodson's Miseducation of the Negro, And Carter Woodson was really stuck on that whole mental piece and what slavery had done to the mind of our people. He wrote a book, and he wrote another book that's not quite as known, well known as the Miseducation. The name of the book is called The Mind of the Negro. And he attempts to analyze some things that they were doing, like their writings and their letters, to kind of see what they were thinking and how that would and how that was working. So that was an excellent book. And then there's another one by a historian who's my mentor. His name is Dr. E.E. Thorpe. He was at a North Carolina Central University in Durham. He wrote a book called The Old South, A Psychohistory. And he also talks about some of these same kind of things that you were mentioning. So I just wanted to mention those two as well, because that's very important. And a lot of our listeners usually normally do self-study, strong self-study. So these are some things that they can look at. And just to remember to let them know, too, that our program is archived. And you can go in the archive and get, if you missed the name of these books, at www.timepointawakening.com. Okay, you have a couple of callers that I'm going to open up if they are listening or calling. One is area code 414-588. Are you listening, caller? Would you like to say something? 414-588. Okay, I guess you're just listening. Thank you so much. 414-736. Are you listening? Would you like to say something? 414-736. Okay, well, we appreciate you for listening. Thank you. Area code 414-315. Area code 414-315. All right, you're listening as well. Thank you. We do appreciate your listeners, and it's not always necessary to say something, but you're open, you're welcome to do that. And if there's anybody on the Internet who is listening, you can call us here at area code 215-490-9832. And if you need to ask my dear brother, Kwaku, any questions, you can do so by calling us at that number, and we will open the lines for you. Area code 414-507. Are you listening, or would you like to say something?
Me.
Yeah.
Hey.
Would you like to say something?
I like what Brother Kwaku was saying, and what he was saying about I call it the culture mind transplant, and how they forced their European culture on us back in the days, and that changed our whole perspective. And right now, we're looking at how we were forced to take on this European mindset, and then calling it if it's good enough for my grandmother, it's good enough for me, and the whole thing. But I like what he was saying, though. That was off the chain. All right.
All right, beautiful. Thank you, my brother. Okay, area code 414-416. Area code 414-416. Would you like to say something, caller, or are you just listening? Okay. I know, Brother Harris, you said your phone kept going in and out. I don't know if you'd like to say something or ask the question.
Can you hear me now okay?
Yes, I can. Real good.
Oh, okay. Oh, great. Awesome. Yeah, Brother Kwaku, good to hear from you. Good Brother LaRue, Alfonso, great hearing all you guys tonight. I just appreciate what was being said. But moving forward, and I guess I'll address this to Brother Kwaku. You know, with all the efforts being made with the Black Lives Matter, I can't think of the other group, NFAC, things of that nature. I mean, it seems like a lot of people are trying to move in the right direction, but I just don't trust it for the simple fact that we need to educate our own people and with our mindset. And I mean, just how are we going to get to that situation where we can have our own schools and situations and so forth? I mean, because when you think about when we did what we did with the Black Wall Street and when they tore everything down and so forth, I mean, that was done mainly because we had our own banks, Air Force and things of that nature and stuff like that, and they didn't want to pay us back. You know, they didn't see paying black people back, and that was one of the other reasons that they tore all that down. So, I mean, we really need to be in a situation where we have to separate ourselves and be at a different location and stuff within this same planet. So, I don't know. I just, what are your thoughts on how we move forward in that direction?
You know, I mean, I think that's the million-dollar question, because you look at anything in the annals of history, there's never been a time where people have been enslaved, so-called released, and didn't live with those same very captors. So you put yourself in a very, very difficult situation, because you have those people who still believe to this day that black people are inferior, that people are a second-class citizen. You look at just as late as 1994, there was a great New York Times bestseller written called The Bell Curve by Hernstein Murray, and it was supposedly still talking about the genetic inferiority of the black man. Now, couple that with what you were saying before, you talk about the black Wall Streets. Well, we've proven that we were not intellectually inferior. In fact, that we had great skills, that we could be our own great nation. And you ask yourself, why didn't we? And that goes even back into Brother Alonzo. We can weave all of this in together with Brother Neely Fuller. And when you start talking about it, the one thing that we've never had, out of all of the brilliance, of all of the genius that we've had, is we've never had a really full-armed militia. And I'm talking about the type of militia that can protect them. So just like when you look at what's going on in these cities with the unrest, and now what can your president do? He calls in his federal troops, his goons, his thugs, and he said, I know you got weapons, but I promise you, your weaponry can't match mine. Until you have the weaponry to match your opponent, you're always going to be subservient to him. You're always going to be at a disadvantage. You'll do things on a moral level, but you'll never be able to do things on a level of equality. And so to your point right there, as we start to build up again, because we know that we can write the poems, we know that we can play basketball, we know that we can build the computers, that we can build different dams with our architectural and engineering genius. But the one thing, like I said, what we failed to do is to have a place where we can protect ourselves. And that's not by accident, because the times where we have failed to protect ourselves, or where we did attempt to protect ourselves, you look at the Denmark beaches, you look at the Nat Turners, you look at the way that rebellions are quelled. And like I said, something that was different from all of us as far as people who are enslaved individuals on North America, we have never outnumbered our captors here. So when you start to look at it, Martin Luther King, he said, I'm a nonviolent man, but even if I wasn't, for pragmatic reasons, I wouldn't choose to go violence. He said, because we don't have the number or the arm or the militia or the military. So what we have to do is to build up ourselves a strong, because we've proven we can do it on the other front. And what we have to do is say, even if it means death, because that's how they stopped it in the past. You know, everybody talks about second rights amendments and second right amendments, but they always forget about what they did to our brothers in the Black Panthers out in Oakland when they started carrying it. They passed that Mulford Act quicker than you can say hot potato. And so when we start to think about that, they find ways to neutralize us. And then on top of that, what do? They kill your leaders. And then what do? You get opportunists who say, I want to be a leader, but they're not really type of leaders. And Bobby Wright warned about that, these fake leaders, these wolves in sheep clothing. They come out because they have the same hue as you and are able to fool you with their cunning tongue. That's the psychopathic, because the trait of a psychopath is a glib personality, and that's a false charm, an ability to make you believe and think what you're doing. When you look at most of our preachers and our players, they're the same. They got the tongue, and what do? They all find a way, not all, but the majority find a way to manipulate. So to get back to your question, what we have to do is have soldiers who are willing to give and pay the ultimate sacrifice.
Exactly.
And say, even if I cannot make it, I'm going to make it better for my family. And guess what? We don't need to be here. You know, we all, when we watched the fictional movie Black Panther, it was something that was so real about that, when the brother said, hey, just throw me, just kill me. He said, and bury me in the sea like my ancestors, who knew it was better to be dead than be in bondage. Well, we've been in bondage for over 400 years. And what we got to recognize is, which one do we want? Do we want to live on our knees, or do we want to die on our feet? And I'm at the point right now where I'm saying this is ridiculous, because guess what? We dying anyway. You look at what happened to Brother Aubrey in Georgia, Jockey. You look at what happened to Brother Trayvon, Brother Tamir, Brother Sandra, and good Lord, Sister Breonna Taylor. You can't even sleep in the house. So now when we go through that, we have to understand for reasons that are proven and beyond measure, that we have to be more than not only willing to protect ourselves and our own, but we got to gather that sense of community again. And that is one thing that the NFAC is starting to prove. They said, hey, we're willing to do this, but we're going to let you know this ain't going to be an easy fight. Now, I promise you, you got the J. Edgar Hoovers of the world today who are looking into them now, trying to figure out a way to infiltrate, looking at a way to bust them to see what's the weakness in this group and what they can do. Because when you see armed, disciplined people with guns, it gets nervous. But what we had to do is we had to have brothers who had former police experience to gather all of the information that they learned and to see how can we use that. And the one thing that I love about all of the black people is they always have a magnanimous position. They don't just say, hey, we going out killing people haphazardly. You don't mess with us, we're not going to mess with you. But what we do have to do is, without resounding the fact, and I don't care if the face is white or if the face is black, if you do anything against the black community, against somebody who was within that bubble, so to speak, under the protection of a community in the village, you must pay the price. See, people continue right. to do to them what you allow them to do. And because we allow them to deny us, we allow them to manipulate us, we allow them to attack us and to even kill us without any harm, it makes no sense. And I tell the people this all the time. The irony of America is staggering and stinking. They go out and they kill you, and then they want you to return with a peaceful rally. That's idiotic. It doesn't make sense. Exactly. But you say, well, why would you do it? That's the brainwashing. That's the menticide. That's the fool's trap. That's the Pied Piper. That's the hypnotism that goes on with our community. Until we get out of this malaise and this lull, we'll continue to see what we see. But like you said, Brother Horace, what we have to do is we have to be willing to have soldiers who are willing to sacrifice. We have to have soldiers who are willing to protect. We have to have soldiers who understand that the battle is not just one of the brain, but it's also one of the brawn. But when you connect the brawn and the brain, oh, then you got something special. And we've seen it already. They don't want to teach us about a lot of our generals, but the little bit that they give us, you want to look at a Shaka Zulu, somebody who was killing the British during the same times of the enslavement period over here in America, it lets us know what we have the capability to do. And if we can match that, oh, my goodness, what could we be? That's why the people don't want to mess with North Korea, because it's a tiny little place, but they understand what nuclear capability they got. We also have to establish different friendships, and that's why Gaddafi is gone. When you start to think about everything that we've done at any type of point to be able to solidify allies, to be able to solidify friends, they found a way to neutralize that. And you think about who did the neutralizing with that. That was during Obama, and that was during the Clinton regime. So even people who sometimes you believe to be his friends act in ways that are counterproductive and contrary to the best wills of the people. So we have to be careful with who we align for. In Haiti, I believe it was they who said they had to get the collaborators first before they could even attack the so-called enemy, because it was the collaborators who would bring their plans to a naught before it could even get off the ground.
Yeah. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay. All right. We got Brother Lush. You got anything you want to add to the conversation?
Yeah, real quick. Brother Quake, I got to ask them, how would Dr. Bobby Wright look at the Nigerians today in that country that they themselves created one of, I think it's like the second largest statue of Jesus on that, in that country, on that continent? What would you think Bobby Wright would analyze through that creation, especially when Chinese were instrumental in carving that structure out?
I think the first thing you would say is that you could see how Africa has been raped. You could see how her material resources have been the jewel of the eyes of many people who natural land that they were indigenous to did not have it, so they found ways to manipulate and deceive. But he'd be disappointed, 100% he would be disappointed, because what happens is it's just like during the original slave trade. You come in with butter and rum and different toys and trinkets and novel devices that captures the people for a moment. And you can see people, no matter where they're at, to be able to buy into a Western society. And once you manipulate it, poison, it only takes a little poison to continue to ruin everything else. So you say, how would he feel? He'd be absolutely frustrated, because Nigeria, specifically with the amount of riches that they have, the amount of intelligence that they have, you look at all of the places in Africa, especially what they want to call sub-Saharan Africa, that they will allot us and give us. Nigeria is a jewel. And so for Western society to be able to capture that and to be able to westernize that only reinforces that the true power that we have will be neutralized at the beginning. And until we can come to the state to understand what is really success, what is really the things that we need, we'll continue to be putting ourselves in situations where we try to act like somebody else. We try to look like somebody else. Over in Africa, specifically West Africa, skin lightening, skin whitening cream goes by the dozen. And this ability to have a person to what hate they self. And they tell you, and this is not said by me, it's just repeated by me, whenever you can force a person to seek a deity who you have all respect, that you believe to be omniscient, and you give him the color of something that he could not have been, it makes your mind subconscious believe that anybody that looks like him, anybody that talks like him, is always or better or more closely related to the Almighty and has a closer connection to heaven, has a closer connection to the divine. And so you want a piece of that. And what we have to recognize being the original man, and I think biology teaches us that without even need for argument or debate, we have to recognize and truly love ourselves as a beauty. But brother, it's just like a pimp. A pimp can make the most beautiful woman think that she ugly, that she can't go nowhere. You know, you wonder how inside of a circus they contain elephants and tigers and lions. It's all because it's hypnotic and it's drug, and there's no drug that is more potent than that of religion. And so once you intensify that, and I tell you, there's no greater source in a black family than mama or grandmama. So if you can get grandmama or mama to buy into that and they pass it down, well, then it becomes not the white man's word, but it becomes mama who validated that, grandmama who validated that. But if their mind has been poisoned, and even in their hearts and they love, they pass it down in a careless, reckless, but ignorant type of manner, we continue to do that. So what we have to do, again, is what Brother Bobby Wright was telling us to do, and that's to what? To free ourselves, to free our mind. Our brother Alfonso talked about the falsification of the African conscience by Dr. Amos Wilson. And when we start to look at these things, what they've taught us to do is when we hear stuff like this, or them fools radical, or them fools that lost their mind. This is what's going to happen to them. And so we learn to be, you know, self-defeatists. We know how to put ourselves down within. And so what we have to do is we have to have those few brave soldiers, those ladies who are not afraid to speak, those brothers who are not afraid to speak, to come up. Because we understand once people start to see the light, the true light, oh, they come around, but it's not enough of us to be able to galvanize together to really show what we can do. And that's because the people have us scared. I tell people this all the time, and this is what's happened in Nigeria. They find four ways to get you. The first way they try to get you is they get you to sell out. They give you the new job. They give you the title. They allow you to have those trinkets and even be standing up taller than the other people. And that's how they got Papa Doc over in Haiti, because you replace a dictator with the dictator. So if they can't sell you out, you know what they do? They take the bones out your closet. And because so many of us have assimilated into this society, there's some things in our closet nobody want nobody to see. And if those things are pulled out, guess what? Now they can assassinate your character. They can destroy your reputation. But let's say you are a person who lives above board and they don't have nothing that can come out that can ruin you. They're going to create something, or they're going to create or pull something out on somebody who you love. They don't care about lying. And if the lion don't get you and the people still stay by you, they're going to either then go to the fourth level, and that's either imprison you, make you leave, like Sister Asada Shakir. We still have prisoners of wars locked up in prison where their voices have been silenced, or they literally kill you. And that's why we revere the Malcolm X's. We revere the Medgar Evers. We revere the Martin Luther Kings. We revere the Fred Hampton, because we see that they sacrificed and paid the ultimate price. But in them paying the ultimate price, they were no longer there to lead us, and those who were not yet equipped or worthy to take on the mantleship took it and led us to a different strait. And then, like I said, it's not only captured here. We get to think in America, North America, South America, and this. What we got to do is open up our minds and understand that this is a global war. This is a global war. So they're trying to get people everywhere. And when you look at a real map of Africa and you see how vastly humongous it is and the beautiful resources that are there, why wouldn't a conqueror, why wouldn't a person with an evil mindset to be able to control and rule and dominate over people go to the place to get the natural resources and then be able to use those same resources to manipulate people with pennies on the dollars to do their bad deeds? We see. And it's a sick society, and until something happens dramatically for us to change and to really wake up, we're going to continue in this perpetual state. And to that point, how sad is it when we try to get back to the motherland, touch that soil where our ancestors walked, to only find out our ancestors have been just as our current peers have been indoctrinated to the same level, if not worse than us here in these states.
Wow. Okay, Sister Dee Dee, you want to add something real quick? I know we only got about 9 minutes. I'm going to turn it back over to Brother Alfonso. Sister Dee Dee, you have any questions or comments?
But Baba, just such a good show, and it's not enough time. It's not enough time for me to say what I want to say. I just enjoyed that brother so much. Thank you so much.
All right, thank you always for listening and your support. Appreciate you so much.
Oh yes.
Yeah. Okay, Brother Alfonso.
Once again, family, thank y'all for listening in. Brother Kwaku, we are going to looking on your schedule. I know you at high demand, and we can see why.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we can see why you at high demand, brother. We
ain't
are
no
truly,
secret.
Right, we are truly blessed and honored to have you in the city, man, being Milwaukee, and doing what you do, man. So we pray that the Creator and the ancestors continue to guide you and protect you as we travel amongst our open enemies, brother. So thank you once again, man, for being with us, Brother LaRue. Thank you for, you know, I got at you at short notice, but we're going to carve out some space and time for you to have a two-hour conversation with you as well, because the conversation as it relates to why we shouldn't call our ancestors slaves is a critical conversation as well. So, and once again, family, the rationale for choosing to honor Bobby Wright was, once again, looking at the reality of how we have to really start understanding and recognizing and identifying the nature of these European males and their hatred and once again, the psychopathic personality that these males that are on the police force, but not only on the police force, what we're dealing with. And when we understand and recognize the nature of what we're dealing with, we can start to really equip and prepare ourselves and our children to be able to not only survive but defend themselves. We got to start having some real conversations like Brother Quake, who was just talking about getting ourselves in a position where we can defend ourselves from those external forces and those internal forces. So we really got to start moving that conversation. And I just wanted to say to Doc Rogers, I appreciate you correcting me as it relates to the continued format or continued conversation of what the scholars before Bobby Wright were doing. Because once again, when we think about Marcus Messiah Garvey, mm-hmm. he not only had a idea, but he had an implementation.
Mm-hmm.
He had a practice or form of where he was helping brothers and sisters practice or retain their African personality. So thank you for correcting me for that. And those of us who are students of psychology, we call Elijah Muhammad the master psychologist. Because what Elijah Muhammad was able to do at that time in our story with transforming brothers and sisters' lives from pimps, hoes, and hustlers, drug dealers into the Nation of Islam, that was some master psychology. And so once again, those of us who are students of the art of Black African developmental psychology, we honor Elijah Muhammad for what he was able to do at that period in our story, because we were a different type of human being in the 50s and 60s when they pumped in those drugs into our community where brothers and sisters was on heroin, on cocaine, on the opiates type stuff. So the type of drugs that was being pumped into our community for Elijah Muhammad to get brothers and sisters off those drugs, once again, that was truly some, like we say, cognitive restructuring and behavior modification. So you got anything you want to add to that, Doc Rogers?
No, I think you want to mention anything about your next week's program?
Well, next week, I'm going to attempt to try to get the individuals who are the nutrient therapists.
Okay.
And once again, the nutrient therapy piece is us being able to have a conversation about from an epigenetics perspective, because we got to understand the warfare that is being implemented on us is a chemical warfare as well. And you can bring Kwaku back and talk about that from the within the context of how many of the chemicals that we are digesting and the impact that is happening on our neurotransmitters and how it's impacting the inability or the neurotransmitters to disseminate or move information. And we have to really hone in on the conversation about the lead and the impact that the water that our children are drinking and the our pregnant women are drinking and the impact that's having on the brain development. Mm-hmm. And when your brain is damaged by lead, it's that type of damage to the brain is to a certain extent irreversible. And there's statistics, there's data to show that those individuals who were exposed to lead early on in their development, they do have problems with their emotional regulation. They tend to be more violent, and they tend to have learning disabilities. So we got to start understanding the chemical warfare that is being implemented on us so that we can help our brothers and sisters prior to them producing children, get them on the right diet. Get them on the right diet. When they produce a child, that child is coming into the universe with all of its faculties, unless they have an organic condition. But at least there are some things we can do to implement so that we can start producing the type of human beings we need to produce to move forward into the 21st century.
All right. Okay. All right. Well, thank you to my brothers and sisters. Thank you. What were you saying, Brother Apollo?
I said once more, I was just saying thanks, family, for you all taking time with us on this Saturday evening.
Thank you very much. So be with us on Tuesday at 7 o'clock. We'll be back with the Black Reality Think Tank, and then on Thursday, and then we return again Saturdays, next Saturday afternoon at 3 and at 6. Thank you so much, my brothers and sisters. Have a wonderful and productive week.
And thank you.
Okay. Oh,
that's what I told you. I know you heard what the president said.
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.